ANZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bloodstock podcast with Tim Rowe and Charmaine Bukovec.
On episode 10 of the Business in Bloodstock podcast, myself, Justin Darcy, and co-host Tim Rowe are joined by Lindsay Parks, JD Hayes, on the back of Mr. Brightside's agonisingly close second in the Cox Plate, while Peter Mullen joins Tim Rowe on a share in success.
We're delighted this week to have JD Hayes from Lindsay Park on episode 10 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast. There's no better stable at the moment in form. They're really firing and, you know, the next generation coming through. Thanks for joining us, JD.
No, thank you. And thank you for that kind intro. Things are certainly going well at the moment and hopefully it may continue.
Sometimes we have to make these things up, but certainly I don't think so with your stable, the way you've built, you know, for 12 and 18 months. Obviously, it's a concerted effort between the family business.
Yeah, and it's not just, we're just the head of Lindsay Park, the faces that you see. It's actually everyone behind the scenes. We're surrounded by incredible staff. We've got world-class facilities and really good client base, and we've been able to get our hands on some really good cattle as well. So they're coming through and just trying to get the best out of each horse. I know it's just dropped a lot of cliches in one, but it is true, and we're glad to see the results on the racetrack at the moment.
We're speaking to JD just after, a couple of days after Mr. Brightside. Narrow defeat, I guess, possibly a bit of pill, but you could look, dare I say it, on the bright side.
Yeah, absolutely looking on the bright side. He put up his run. He was tremendous in defeat. We actually thought he won. We're going to bar where we watched the race from Mooney Valley there. It's a deceiving angle. It looked like he won by a long neck. So it was like losing the grand final after siren because we thought he won and then was just in shock once we heard the over-the-speakers Romantic Warrior. But that's not to take any credit away from him, and what a ride by James McDonald. It was incredible. And just three champions there, Alligator Blood, Romantic Warrior and Arbloke, going head-to-head. It made for a very, very good Cox Plate, and I think one that we talked about for a while there.
On the back of that second placing as well, will we be seeing Mr. Brightside again over the Flemington Carnival and, of course, potentially Hong Kong as well?
Yeah, he's an absolute marvel. He seems to have pulled up really well, licked the bin, trotted up nice and sound. So at this stage, we're going to keep our eyes at the Flemington Carnival. They're either 2,000 or the mile, leaning towards the mile, and then we'll see if Hong Kong's still on the cards then. But certainly, he's got a big, big 6 weeks ahead of him and even bigger 12 months. He's just getting better with age and hopefully can continue on that trajectory.
Sort of on that Cox Plate, you mentioned a lot of people, you know, in our audience, breeding-wise, understandably take their colts off the stud, but three hardened geldings running the places there, that's what's great about, can be great about racing. You know, we see those horses week after week and going into battle.
Yeah, and what's tremendous about Brightside is his last eight starts at the top level. He's had five wins and 3 seconds, so he's incredibly consistent, and hopefully he's here for a few more seasons to enjoy.
Do you think it's something about Mooney Valley as well? Of course, he was an All-Star Mile winner. He was dominant in the Fan Stakes last year, and you know, he was closed off super well in last year's Cox Plate, and of course, running another incredible race this year.
Yeah, he certainly does improve at the Valley. He's got that really short, quick stride, and he seems to corner like a greyhound there, and he gets around Mooney Valley really well. So we're happy that the Cox Plate's there for a couple more years and before they do their renovations. But, yeah, I can't wait to go one better next year, hopefully.
Despite sort of finishing second in the Cox Plate, it was a great day for the stable on Saturday. You took out the Inglis banner for the second year in a row, and you just said off air that both those 2-year-olds are going to go to the paddock. The winner there, Bold Bastille, you know, was never going to get beaten. You're probably pretty confident after about 100 metres once found the front.
Yeah, she's a very professional filly, Bold Bastille, and she's shown that in her trials. But when she jumped from the machine so well and led with her ears pricked, we thought she'd take a world of beating from there. And it was just great for everyone involved. We purchased her at the sale in conjunction with Johnny O'Neill and Aussie Kerr, and the Pope's family who bred her stayed in for a good chunk and then filled with a lot of loyal clients from the stable, such as Cole McKenna. So it was a really good result. We were really happy that she was able to kick off a career in such dynamic fashion, and she looks to have an exciting autumn ahead.
On that filly, it's all right to go and buy these horses, but you've got to have owners, and there are some very prominent owners, the Aussie Kerrs and John O'Neill's. The colours that she wears are very well known. For a rebuilding stable, as you were when your father went back to Hong Kong, to get them into the stable, I guess, is important, and to get some success for them.
Yeah, exactly right. That's our first runner for those colours, and to get a winner like that on a big day, it was sort of like flushing it out the middle for six. It was a really good result, and it was just a great thing for the stable and the clients.
And it's not often you pick up a big prize money check for the female-owned Blue Allure as well, finishing sort of midfield there, but picking up six figures prize money, again, like Arkansas Kid did last year, courtesy of the English Pink bonus.
Yeah, it's a very good concept. It's like a race within a race, and we won with Bold Bastille, but then we won the internal race amongst the girls-owned horses of Blue Allure, where she got across the line in fifth and picked up 200,000, which is just incredible. So it was really a day that the cards just fell our way in that race, and we're very happy to have been able to take both prize money checks home.
Of course, Apulia on the day as well. We mentioned off air that that horse is very much on track for the Derby this week. This podcast will probably go to air after the Derby, but nonetheless, that horse is going incredibly well and looks certainly a stay for the future.
Absolutely. He was very tough on what was a fast lead speed, and to ground it out shows he can stay, and he's got a big schedule ahead of him with possibly backing up into the Derby, which will make it 3 weeks in a row, but he's a big, strong colt that hasn't missed on the feed bin, and his handling is racing. So all signs are good at home, and the horse has to be 100% A-OK to go around the Derby, but the early signs are good.
I thought we'd touch, JD, on the, I guess, as I said just before, the rebuilding of Lindsay Park when your father chose to go back to Hong Kong, and he's doing well up there. Maybe it was the narrative that your father wanted to put out there, but you did obviously lose some owners and some horses, and then Tom Dabernig obviously went to Warrnambool, set up on his own. So as the way you've rebuilt, and this fairly regular city and state success now, has it surprised you that you've turned it around so quickly, or not at all?
Look, it was trying times there for a little bit. We had Shake Hamdan pass away, so the Shadwell dispersal, Tom leaving, and all those things that happen. But when you strip it right back, we're surrounded by terrific people. We've got world-class facilities. We already had an established client base. A lot of people left, but a lot of people stayed and stuck by us and gave us some incredible support. And we're lucky we had horses like Brightside coming through, where we as a team, were able to showcase that we can manage these horses and place them. And I'm glad that we've been able to strike back, and I just think it's a testament to all the hard work at everyone here at Lindsay Park. It's a real team effort. We're like a football team. Everyone has their role, plays their role. It's not down to one individual. And I'm very happy with the way that the stable's ticking over now.
Just sort of on that, obviously with the horses, the punters and the public would have known that had already raced at that time. But by my calculation, you had nearly, in sort of 2019, 2020, the stable had spent nearly $16 million on yearling. So you must have been confident that there would have been some nice young horses there that were unexposed that hopefully would put you on the map.
We did have a nice crop there. We really got a kick along from our two-year-olds last season. Was a big thing that we acquired from the sales, and we had horses like Gentleman Roy, Ex-Leader, Crosshaven, quite a few established horses as well that were really handy to have in the stable, and they won their races for us. And we did have good cattle here. So when you stripped it back with the facilities and the client base and the staff, I think it was inevitable that we're going to be able to get some successes. The ultimate formula that we say at home is success happens when, no, good luck happens when hard work meets opportunity. So we got given the opportunity, we worked hard, and hopefully that culminated in success, and we did.
Speaking of early days when you joined the partnership in 2021, Zaydani winning at Eagle Farm in that listed race, that was a fantastic kickstart for your career as, co-trainer alongside your brother Ben.
Yeah, Zaydani was another very important one for us too, because she was our big winner over Cup Week. and Brenton Cherry Taylor, who are great supporters of the stable. It's good to get a result for them as well. So, you know, Zaidani holds a very special place in our hearts as well, especially after Matriarch. She went on and won a Ballarat Cup. So, you know, she was pretty special.
How does now with Will joining the partnership as well, how do your three siblings sort of work together, or who calls the shots? Is there a sort of a strategy there, the way you three work together?
That's quite funny. That's the number one question we get asked working with family. We do have discussions and it lacks a professional touch sometimes, but that can be a good thing because you're direct to the point. But there's a whole number of us that helps make the decisions, and we encourage the discussion because it challenges each other and you have to prove your point. And it's not just down to us three boys. There's Dom Ryden, the racing manager, and Grace Ramage as well, and quite a number of other people that have an influencing opinion, and many minds together, we usually end up with the right decision. So, it's good working as a family, and we're very humbled and respectful that we've been given a better leg up than most people walking into Lindsay Park with what we've got. So that's not lost on us. And we're just hoping that with the team we've got around us, we can achieve more success.
I neglected to mention your sister, Sophie, there, obviously an integral part of the, I guess, behind the scenes, not on the trainer's ticket, but, you know, she, knew Sophie when she was at Godolphin and Darley, and I guess that marketing arm that all the big stables need now with communications and that back end. It's not just training the horses.
Oh, 100%. Sophie's the big boss. She actually does a huge role. She's on the other side of the business, more the financial side, and she was working there as a general manager, but she's currently in foal at the moment. So she's currently raising her family, and she'll be back with vengeance in a couple of months, I'm sure.
Maternity leave, good on her.
With Will coming into the partnership as well, with now the three brothers, it's, you know, would you be able to tell us a little bit about what he's brought to Lindsay Park in these last couple of months?
Yeah, he's really brought, Will's a really hard worker. He's and he's a terrific horseman as well. He's actually the best rider out of us three boys, which I struggle to admit, but unfortunately you have to admit some home truths. He's a talented horseman, and he's brought that sports science professionalism that he got from his AFL days, and he's really focused on the one percenters, and he plays a quite integral role here, helping run the farm. So he also, in terms of actually planning the races, he's really brought that sharper edge to Ben and I and the team here at Lindsay Park, so it's been good.
I've seen you. Do you enjoy the sales process? You're sort of, I've seen you pretty much in Perth. You've been to a lot of the sales and meeting with stud farms and vendors and things like that. Is that part of the business that you enjoy, or is it just part of it?
I enjoy looking at the stock. I don't enjoy the price tags that are associated with them because it is quite expensive to get your hands on the good stock, but need to make sure that you've got good cattle coming through the gates to ensure that you're able to compete in the good days. So, Josh Ricks, our bloodstock manager, does a big job. Tommy Ryan, and it's a whole team effort. Dean Hawthorne helps us select them at yearling sales, and it would be remiss not to mention him. He's absolutely picked the eyes out of what aren't obvious, the obvious types at the sales. We sort of always had to shop within that little margin there, and he's been able to really, really find the needle in the haystack a few times there, especially with Little Bros and the likes of that. So, now, I sound like a broken record, but we've got a great team that helps us make the good decisions.
With the relationship with the bloodstock agent, you know, certain horses suit certain styles of training, I guess. So that relationship, well, you have to have that understanding between the trainer and the bloodstock agent. Obviously, it seems to be working with Dean at the moment.
No, for sure. And one thing that we've learned over the time, because we train on hills, is that we need horses with good width behind their hocks and big engines behind. We seem to get better results with horses that are sort of built that way. So they seem to suit the hills here at Lindsay Park, and that's sort of one of the many things that we look for at a yearling sale.
And with Josh coming on board as well, sort of not all that long ago, you know, I saw him just recently at the two-year-old sales, and you're looking everywhere for nice horses. He was underbidder on, I think it was the top lot. Yeah, you with a big stable like that, you have to keep looking all year to try and find the right horses.
No, absolutely. And a good horse can come from anywhere. Look at Mr. Brightside. He was a private purchase by Wayne Allman out of New Zealand. So, and then Bold Bastille was a beautifully purchased yearling out of the Premier Sale there. So good horses can come from anywhere, and you just always have to be active looking for them.
We touched on your Blue Diamond winner, Little Bros, as well just then. Would you be able to tell us what you sort of made of his preparation and what might be to come, you know, in the autumn?
Yeah, his preparation was a pass mark. It was a little bit frustrating when it was coming to the crunch. He sort of missed a start and we had wide barriers, so we had to sort of take our medicine. But he's actually, for Mr. Young, going to race next season in Hong Kong under his permit. He's going to join Dad up there, and hopefully he has a really good season for Mr. Young up there.
Would that mean he'd be gelded or try and keep him as an entire colt?
No, you wouldn't geld Blue Diamond winners.
No. Definitely not. On another, speaking of another Lindsay Park colt or stallion now in WA, the Longleafs sold very well. And as I touched on, I don't know you're over there looking at them. And have you got any in the stable?
Yeah, we've got one Longleaf. He was a beautiful physical himself. He was one of the top lots at a yearling sale. And he seems to stamp that into his progeny. We've got one out of a mare called Tricolore, half the Everglade. And he's really coming to hand nicely. He actually had a little jump out here at the farm, and he's just gone far enough. He's got a beautiful big frame that he's going to fill out into. But I do feel like the Longleaf progeny would be more than happy to have a couple more of them in the stable.
Another horse who is now a stallion that was through your stable, Acer. He was one of those horses that may have been a frustration to punters, but personally one of my favourites, second in the Guineas. What do you sort of make of his prospects now over in WA?
I think he's a very well-related horse. He's a brilliant prospect for some breeders over there because he was half ahead of being a really big stallion in the Hunter Valley. Like if he won that Caulfield Guineas, he probably would have been standing up there. But he's a really good physical. He had untapped ability. And I don't feel we got to see the best of him. He unfortunately went amiss over there in WA, and I'm glad he's been able to make a home there at stud. I think he'll be quite a successful stallion, I hope.
You touched on Will, you know, obviously had a successful footy career at the Bulldogs and Carlton, just making the elite grade of Australian football for those international listeners. It is a massive effort to make that far, but you weren't a bad footy player yourself, and I just read before you made a comeback for your Rowa this year.
Yeah, Will and I had some say similar ability, but I needed blinkers and gelding. I was a bit distracted and better suited at country footy, so I placed myself correctly. I went back to country grade. I'll be remembered as a far better footballer than what I was because I was placed correctly, and Will was able to achieve the big time. So I'm happy to be well-related to him, but I like people thinking that I could have been better than what I was because I'd probably let them down.
Obviously, your footy career, you were a graduate of Melbourne Grammar and you were captain of that footy side. Was footy sort of ever on the cards as, you know, you wanted to play AFL?
I wanted to, yeah. I was captain of the school side, which was good, and then played 30-odd games VFL for Footscray, but I've seen the light. I didn't think I was big enough, strong enough, fast enough or committed enough to make the big time. So I came back to my beloved year old Magpies and had a great couple of seasons there with a few mates and really focused on working on the farm and building into a training career, which I'm glad I've done now looking back on it.
Where do you see Lindsay Park sort of heading now, sort of size and the number of horses in work? Have you got goals set out, or are you sort of happy where it's at the moment? And obviously, I'm sure everyone wants to improve the quality.
Yeah. Well, our point of difference is our farm, and it's also our Achilles heel. It costs quite a bit to maintain, so it's a beautiful balancing act of how many horses you want in work. And we're getting to capacity now, which is good. And in terms of measuring goals and goal setting, we sort of just do it on the number of winners. So in the first season, Ben and I had a goal of breaking 100. We got that. We had a goal this season of breaking 150. And then now with Will on board, the team's setting their sights on 180 and seeing if we can get there. So hopefully we'll be able to just keep increasing the winners, which will be good.
In terms of your own ambitions, I know you've got a connection to Hong Kong. You might have even been born there. But do you see, could you have you got an ambition to perhaps train up there once you maybe once your father comes back, or something you're looking at?
Yeah, that is a big personal goal of mine. I can speak the language well to a certain degree. I can get you a hamburger. I've done university. I studied it at University Mandarin, and we spent the first 10 years of my life there on a permanent ID card. So I frequently go back and visit Dad, and we've got a big client base there established, and it is a goal of mine personally. I'd love to hopefully be able to acquire a license there, but I think we still need to get a few more winners on the board and build that CV to be worthy, because it is a unbelievable place for a horse trainer, and it attracts the world's best.
Speaking of that degree, you said you obviously studied in Mandarin as well, and you have that commerce degree behind you as well. How's that sort of stood you, you know, for this, you know, training trio of yourself with your brothers at Lindsay Park? It's handy to have all these assets behind you.
No, it was good. So I studied at Deakin and got a double degree in commerce Chinese, and it was probably the best time of my life. What it taught me was just a little bit of balance as to what it looked like outside the racing industry in that studying phase. I was working in the stable casually just to get a bit of pocket money, but it really cemented what I wanted to do. I was very interested in the horse racing business, and that commerce side of it has helped in running this business of Lindsay Park. But yet again, we've employed some great brains around us that help make sure that all the wheels in motion are spinning smoothly. So it has helped me in good stead, but luckily we've got smarter people at the steering wheel than me.
I'm not just saying this, but from a journalist perspective, certainly appreciated that Lindsay Park, and there's other trainers out there as well that are very media friendly, I guess. Is that something that's been instilled to you, into you, and the importance of perhaps liaising with the media when they call? I'm sure we get annoying at times because your phones do go constantly.
No, never annoying, Tim. There's no say. We lucky there's quite a few of our ugly heads to move around the media. I've sort of got a head for radio, so I'll stick to the radio, and these podcasts I usually leave for Ben and Will, but it's always good to be able to push the brand forward, and hopefully someone might be watching this and decide to send us a horse. But that's always what's been instilled in us, is that you never say no to an interview.
One last one from me as well. So just a bit of a fun one here. I've got a share in your I'm Immortal at a Savvy Shields Colt. I'm thinking Blue Diamonds and Golden Slippers. Are you guys singing the same thing here?
Dare to dream. Dreams are free. A bit of water to go under the bridge. He's just starting to gallop, and he's a lovely physical. So I'll let you know more in 6 weeks.
Well, while we're on that topic, then, a question without notice. I think he's just gone into the stable, a Zusain colt that mates and I bred a grey with Cameron Bennett, Flying Star. Yeah, so any updates on that colt? Have you laid eyes on him yet?
Yes, it was great to have Flying Star back in the stable, and I remember the Zusain at the sales. It was a beautiful type of a horse, so looking forward to building him through, and I'll let you know more in the coming days.
That's right. Unfortunately, we sold him as a weanling, and we've still got the mare though, touch it. So let's hope that late in the autumn he's on the board.
A share in success, shining a spotlight on ownership success stories.
On this edition of A Share in Success, proudly brought to you by Jimmy Umwalla's Avesta Bloodstock, we've got Peter Mullen, an owner from Victoria, and had quite a bit of success, certainly on the Saturday just gone, Derby Day. He had shares in the Quinella of the Coolmore Stud Stakes, two highly valuable colts. Welcome to the podcast, Peter.
Thank you, Tim.
Let's touch on Saturday first. It must have been quite an exciting day, and particularly from about the 600 home with two, you know, really nice colts fighting at the finish.
Yeah, it was just one of those days that you dream of in the racing industry, that I always think to happen to someone else. And I actually was watching I'm Unstoppable because I didn't think that Osmosis could possibly keep going. And when he got out, I'm Unstoppable. Osmosis just found another gear and kicked away, and it was to get a Quinella in a stallion imagined race like the Coolmore was just what a dreams have made of, you know.
With Osmosis, the winner, obviously Newgate Farm and China Horse Club, and that partnership bought into him before the start of his
three-year-old season, but my understanding is you had a share in the from the start, along with Derby Racing and G1G.
Yes, we got an osmosis at the sales through a good friend of mine, Gary Diamond, who runs G1G Colts and breeding operation. And we also got into I'm Unstoppable at the sales as well. And Henry bought into, and his partners bought into Osmosis in the, June this year. So it's everyone's a winner. It was a very successful day. Just one of those days that you just dream, it's going to happen. But as most people know in racing, it normally doesn't happen. And to get a Cordell, to be honest, I'm still pinching myself. I just have to keep checking it to make sure it's real, because it's just something that the dreams have made of. And it was just had the family there and friends in the after party. That just makes it more valuable to have your family and friends involved in the following the horses.
Obviously, you spread your risk around in quite a few different colts. But was it just the experience, or obviously there's quite some significant kickers involved with Osmosis winning a race like that. Does the money come into it, or is it just the thrill of the achievement?
Both. We in the G1G Colts, we run a business, but we are very passionate about the sport. But you make those business decisions along the way. And we sold some of our share, but we kept some, we just continue to enjoy the ride with these high quality colts, and we're very lucky to have them.
With Osmosis, when did you sort of? I've spoken to Scott Darby and Bjorn Baker's been on record as well that he showed plenty right from his first gallop. So I guess there was some high expectations on him right from the get go.
Well, one of the partners reminded me in the winner's bar on Saturday that you were right. I said, what was I right about? I said, you said the first trial of this horse will win the Golden Slipper. Unfortunately, he had an injury and he had to be spelled for, I think it was a month or two. Nothing too serious, but just time was going to heal. And that's why he didn't get to the Slipper. But it might have been a blessing in disguise, because he, apart from that one run in the run at Constable, we believe he was underdone. He only had one trial, and it was obvious that most people wrote him off, hence the $20. But apart from that run, he's never been beaten in trials or races, and he showed on Saturday what a high-quality colt he really is. By leading all the way down that straight ahead wind, it's not an easy thing to do, and to kick clear. Only special horses can do that, and I think he's a really special horse.
Time will tell, but again, speaking to Henry Fielder and Scott Darby post the Coolmore, they all say that, or both say that he's got maturity to come, that potentially there's the best of the head and, an exciting autumn and possibly four-year-old. I know Scott, potentially an Everest tilt.
Yeah, that's what they've always said, that he'll be better as he gets older. And they're better judges than I on that. I'd say the plan would be to try to get to the Everest, as most owners would want to do with their top class sprinters. And I'm sure that's in the planning. But as we all know in racing, it's just one start at a time. There's no doubt that's where he'll be headed if he's good enough. And I'm sure he would be. I was very surprised that no one picked him up this year, to be personally honest with you. Anyway, that's what it is. And it might have been a blessing, because his run on Saturday was just off the charts.
I Am Unstoppable, for those that probably haven't paid close attention to him and the sales, if you said, he cost $60,000 at sales with his page, they would have said, first of all, what's wrong with him? And there was some X-ray faults. But he's obviously, you chose to buy in, and it's paid off so far.
Yeah, well, I said to Gary Diamond, I said, what's wrong with your talk? He said, what do you mean? I said, this page he's got, he should be a $300,000-$500,000 colt. And he said, oh, he had an X-ray problem, but I really liked the horse. So hats off to Gary. he decided to buy into him, and his time will come. He's a very, very good colt. He's been a bit unlucky, but his time will come. There's nothing guaranteed in this game, but I'm pretty confident he's a Group One horse in the making. He's got an explosive turn of foot, and as we saw on Saturday, it's only a top class sprinter in Osmosis who could beat him. He beat the rest, and given him probably 3 or 4 lengths head start. So he's a stallion in the making for sure, in my opinion.
We'll have to get Gary on for a separate Business of Bloodstock podcast episode, but can you just give us a brief insight to how G1G works and your involvement there?
Well, I first met Gary through Hootson. We had a filly called Hootson, and it was in Gary's colours, and we've built a really great friendship. And Gary decided some 12 odd months ago that he wanted to form a cult syndicate, and I'm a partner in his cult syndicate. So basically, we partners are James Harron, Newgate. We've just joined Rosemont Stud down here in Geelong, and we also picked our own horses at the sale. So that's our business model. So far so good.
And my understanding, once they if they don't make it at Stud and or win a big race to go to Stud, once they're gelded, you sell them off, and it is, as you touched on, it is a business.
Yeah, it's purely a business, the colts. We sell horses that are gelded because we have our sights clearly on stallions. So even if it's a good horse, there's some good horses. We've got NCAP and those sort of horses, they would be on the market. Once they're gelded, they're basically on the market virtually. And with the plan of just trying to get stallions and anything along the way, what's gelded or probably becomes a 4-year-old, we sell them off and then we start again. So we've got the 2-year-olds coming through now.
You touched on you're a Geelong boy born and bred. How did you end up in Hoots and I'm Invincible filly, who obviously won the Magic Millions, trained on the Gold Coast by Toby Edmonds?
Well, I had a couple of horses with Toby, and he sent me a few photos of some yearlings that he wanted to sell. And I kept saying to him, well, I wasn't that interested in it. And he kept sending to me and kept at me. And one person pulled out of this I'm Invincible filly. And I said, what's that brown filly there? She said, I'm Invincible. I said, I'll go in her then. So, that was just luck. That was in October. And she won the Magic Million some 12 weeks later. So that was a fantastic start. And our friendship with Gary Diamond just grew from there. And that's why we're speaking together now.
The person who pulled out would have felt a bit sick, I imagine, after only a couple of months later watching straight away in the Magic Millions.
Yeah, as we know, that's the luck of the draw in the game. You make decisions and you live and die by them. And I'm sure that whoever that was wouldn't have felt that great when she hit the line at Magic Millions, but I tell you, I did.
Yeah, I bet. And can you just tell us a bit about your own background? As I said, you're from Geelong. Have you always been interested in racing, and sort of what led you into the ownership or down the ownership path?
Always loved the horses. My father, he was a keen punter. So I can remember going to the races as a probably 6, 7, 8-year-old. I actually grew up across the road from Mitch Freeman, who I've got horses with now, young Mitch at Ballarat. I've got horses with him. I actually grew up with his father across the road, and their family, Mitch's grandfather, Stan Freeman, he was a bookmaker. And we used to go to the trots together and all that. So it's always been in my blood, the horses. And it started off probably 20 years ago with just a couple of small ones, and just grown and grown and grown from there. And we've had a bit of luck with the G1G Colts.
And professionally, what's your main business, or what have you done in your professional life?
I've been in food all my life. I actually own a food service business in Geelong called P&R Foods, where I supply cafes and restaurants and football clubs and prisons and all that sort of stuff. So They've been doing that for 20 odd years. My daughter runs the office there. That's a family business. So yeah, that's what we do. And then we do the horses as another business, great hobby as well.
And you touched on, you've joined the Rosemont Syndicate, I guess, Anthony Mithen and Nigel Austin, great Geelong people as well, and successful business people.
Yeah, I've known Nigel. I remember him used to come out. I used to have a cafe restaurant on the waterfront at Geelong called The Beach House many years ago, and Nigel and his son used to come on Sunday morning, and all they used to talk about was horses, and they'd have their coffees and just go through the back pages of the horses and whatever else. So I've known Nigel for a long, long time, and I've known Mipo for probably at least 5 or 6 years through the gym and that. So yeah, we decided to we sold them one of the horses at the sales, and we liked some of the horses they bought. I've always wanted to be involved with Rosemont, so we decided, Gary decided this year we will go in with the Rosemont boys, and we have our first runner tomorrow, Melbourne Cup Day, a horse called Cotoggio. So fingers crossed he can get across the line first.
By the time this goes to air, that race will have been run and won, but hopefully he is another winner for you. I won't keep you too much longer, but when a colt, when you do get a colt that goes to stud, and Osmosis will be one, do you sell out completely, or do you breed to that stallion and keep equity in the stallion?
We'll probably breed to that stallion. We'll probably buy some mares in our cop syndicate. I think that is the plan, to buy some mares and breed from that stallion. That's a decision we'll make down the track, but I think that it would be in the planning that we'll buy some mares and take into a horse as of Osmosis' quality and the militarise as well, and hopefully I'm unstoppable, and hopefully a few more.
And with the success, runner success that you have had, well, you've said you've been doing it for 20 years. It is addictive. I'm sure you're not getting out any time soon, and we'll see you at the sales continuing to invest.
Oh, for sure. You know, I'm very passionate about the sport. There's a lot of great people in the sport. You, as people know, you have your good days and you have a lot of bad days as well. So, you know, whilst we just won the Coolmore, I'm on a high, and we'll be there in January at the Magic Millions and trying to find the next Osmosis, and I'm unstoppable and militarised.
Thanks very much for joining us, Peter. It's great to have your insight, and a great Saturday. It's what every owner aspires to, I'm sure, and I certainly do. So thanks very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you. Have a good day.